The Cork Food Stories Podcast with Clara Cooney, Cork's Red FM.
Welcome to this week's Cork Food Stories Podcast. I'm Clara Cooney, owner of Clara Cooks, where my business is all about educating people on all things food. You can find out more about my business on www.claracooks.ie. The podcast came to life with my passion for sharing the stories of the wonderful food producers we have here in Cork. My guest this week is Justin Green from Valuable Ann House in Cork. I had the pleasure of staying there a few years back for a friend's wedding. Valuable Ann is a historic Irish country house, family owned and run, situated near Fermoy in County Cork, with idyllic landscape gardens, wooden grounds, glamping tents, tree houses, and a gin distillery. We'll be talking to Justin today about growing up there as a child when it was a working farm to turning it into a successful business and growing that business to what it is today. Justin, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
I'm really well, and thanks very much for having me.
Not at all. It was a pleasure when I was down there I think it's 4 years ago when I went to the wedding there, but it was lovely to visit again last month and just to see the grounds. And I think this is a great story so people can know a little bit more about Valuable Ann House and also about the gin distillery that you have there on site. A lot of people may not know about Valuable Ann House, as we said, and the history attached to it back. It was built back in 1728, I believe, well before your family took over. So talk to us about the history of the house, Justin.
Yeah, no, sure. The house, as you mentioned, was built in 1728 by Sir Richard Pine. And he had acquired the property in around 1700 and then eventually built a house on the property in 1728. And the Pine family lived here for approximately 250 years until 1953, which is when my grandfather, Squirrel Green, purchased the property along with my granny, Joyce. And they had spent 35 years in Malaya as rubber planters. And whilst my grandfather was English, my granny was Irish. She was a Blake from, you know, the west of Ireland, and she was instrumental in bringing him to Ireland. And they were looking all around where she grew up for a property and didn't find anything they really liked. And then stumbled across Valuable Ann, and Betty Pine, who was the last Pine to live here, actually had two other offers for more money. And she wrote to my grandfather and said, "I want you to have it because I think you will love the place more." So he always said, as soon as he drove in the front gate, he knew that was it. He just loved the trees and the ambience of the place.
Oh, I mean, I love that story in itself. I was only talking recently to a friend about how a lot of deals in Ireland were done with handshakes,
you know, that's right,
back in the days. It wasn't all about, you know, the bottom line and bottom dollar. So
exactly.
That's lovely. And it was a working farm. So, for many years. And you were born there, were you?
Yes, when I grew up here, I've got 52 now, so I grew up here when I was a child in the 1980s mainly, and my father was principally a dairy farmer, and we had some mixed tillage as well. So a lot of my school holidays were feeding calves and, you know, driving tractors and, you know, milking cows, and the summer was always, you know, our favourite time of year because we were bringing in the harvests and piking bales, and there was always lots of activity and work to be done. At the same time, there was a lot of fun things to do as well. Like, you know, we loved our shooting and fishing, and we used to cycle down to the River Bride, which is just down the road, you know, in the summer as evening and trout fish for you know, a couple of hours, and then in the winter we'd have a shoot here. So, you know, we developed a real appreciation of the land and nature and what it means to produce food. And that's kind of stood me in good stead in my career as a hotelier and restaurateur, and then latterly a gin distiller.
Of course. And I suppose then your mum and dad, they started, having paid guests started, was it a bed and breakfast they started in 1985?
Yeah, that's right. The house is a historic house, and it's quite large. And, you know, my parents took the decision to sort of diversify into hospitality, and they opened the house as a guest house. And we are classified by Filter Ireland as a historic house B&B. And they were one of the founding members of Hidden Ireland, which is a collection of, you know, privately owned historic houses dotted around the country. Yeah. And we used to call our guests PGs, which were paying guests back in the 1980s. And they, you know, were natural hosts and very good at it, and then, you know, developed a good reputation, and you know, the business has evolved over 30 years now. And so we took over in, you know, we moved back in 2004, just after my, yeah,
exactly. And we'll talk about that in a second, but let's kind of look at your kind of career before you even took over, because you went to college, you did the Shannon College of Hotel Management there, and
that's right.
And it was, a very established college. A lot of people in Ireland would have gone there for getting their culinary and hospitality background. And then you got an opportunity, of course, to go to Switzerland for your placement, which must have been amazing for you as well at a young age, going over to Switzerland and seeing what it was like over there.
Yeah, no, that was a highlight for me. It was absolutely fantastic. You know, we you know, at the end of the year, I was fluent in catering French. You know, if you discussed anything else other than catering, you know, you're on sticky ground. But and it was, you know, the standards in Switzerland at the time were the best in the world, and it's something we always aspire to. And I really learned the craft of, you know, hotel keeping and hospitality while I was there. You know, there's nothing like actually working in the field to gain that sort of experience. So it was really useful.
Amazing. And then you went on to, you went on working. What year did you go to Hong Kong? Because it was after, obviously, well, college and everything.
Yeah, after I graduated, I managed a restaurant in Dublin for a couple of years. And then I had an opportunity to go to Hong Kong. And I got a job at the Mandarin Oriental in Hong Kong, which was one of the best hotels in the world at the time. And I'd actually applied 3 times. And I think my persistence paid off, and somebody had resigned at the right moment. And I just turned up, and they were impressed with my persistence. And so I had, you know, 3 really happy years there. And, you know, I was there during the handover from Britain to China in 1997. Yeah. So that was really interesting. And we had all sorts of famous people staying, like Princess Diana and you know, John Cleese was there, who was my hero from Fawlty Towers, huge inspiration before I went into the decided to become a hotelier. So it was a really fun place to be in the Mandarin in Hong Kong. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It is the heartbeat of the city, you know, and all the deals are done there. It is, you know, when I was there, you know, all the bankers and lawyers and stockbrokers and people working in the financial services industry came in for their lunch and dinner, and they stayed
amazing
late in the night.
I mean,
cruising.
My God.
We got to know everybody. It was a really fun time to have been there.
Absolutely. And what a like booming place to be. I mean, going from, I suppose, even Switzerland, you know, and you know, Ireland, Switzerland, back to Ireland, to Dublin, to Hong Kong. I mean, that's just what a huge difference that would have been for you. And of course, then you also met your lovely wife Jenny
when you were there. Yeah. Yeah, she actually grew up in Hong Kong, and then we met and fell in love, and, you know, the rest is history.
And I think
she scratches her head every day wondering how she ended up living in North Cork. So you know, make sure you tell her she's very lucky. She doesn't always see it that way. But you know, she's adapted to rural country life very well, and you know,
I know a lot of people who would give their right arm to be living in Cork or in Ireland in general. You know, they absolutely love it. So yes, we are.
Yeah, she's living the dream. She's very lucky.
Exactly, living the dream. I will. I'll tell her that the next time I see her.
Yeah.
So of course, the both of you obviously decided together then, right? You're going to make a move because you wanted to focus on looking at more boutique hotels and managing more boutique hotels. So kind of tell us from Hong Kong where you went to and what was next for you.
Well, after Hong Kong, I went to Dubai and worked at the Jumeirah Beach Hotel, which is also a very large sort of 600 bedroom hotel. And, you know, you're very specialized in one area of the hotel, which I had always sort of worked my way up through the sort of food and beverage side of things. And then, you know, while I was in Dubai, I decided I really need to try and get more rounded experience, and I made a decision to, you know, look for my next job in a slightly smaller size property, and I landed a job in Bali in Indonesia, and I was the sort of deputy general manager of a hotel called the Legian. It was a sort of luxury all suite hotel, had 60 rooms, and you did everything there, you know, from guest relations to, you know, HR and maintenance and business plans and marketing. You know, you had a really well-rounded experience because, you know, I always had my eye on coming back home eventually. Yeah. And I just felt I needed to get a more rounded experience, and smaller properties would give me that, whereas the larger scale properties wouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say that to you, you know, was it always the back of your mind that, you know, yes, I think brilliant getting those fantastic experience with the upscale properties, as you said, but
yeah,
it is at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I'd always encourage Irish people to travel abroad and see the world, because you kind of develop an appreciation of what we have here in Ireland. You know, it is a very unique, special place. You know, we don't feel that way when you grow up here and you think it's, you know, really boring and wet and cold and lacking some of the, you know, the more exotic places. But you know, it is an amazing place, and you have to remove yourself from it to appreciate that and realize.
I agree. I did the same myself, and totally agree with you. But I love you know. Then eventually, okay, so you did that. You were in Bali, and were you over in Scotland for a time? Were you just
and then I moved to the UK. I got a job at I was general manager of Babington House, which is operated and owned by Soho House, which are now a global sort of luxury hotel company with private members clubs and UK based. But you know, I managed Babington, and I was involved in the opening of Soho House New York as well. And you know, we used to run a sort of house up in the Hollywood Hills for Oscars week. So I was kind of sent over there to help out with that. So it was a really incredible experience. And you know, what I loved about Babington was it really turned that sort of traditional country house hotel on its head. You know, whereas in the past, you know, most of the country house hotels in Britain were very stuffy, and you know, everyone was whispering during dinner, and you know, breakfast was last serving, you know, last orders at 9 a.m. And if you wanted to lie in, you know, that was tough life, you missed breakfast. Whereas Babington, you know, had all the kind of London comforts, lots of ice and your gin and tonic and lots of hot water, and you can have a really rip-roaring time and you know, get up at noon and have breakfast. And you know, I just like the whole relaxed vibe, and it completely changed the way I viewed how to run a country house hotel. And it was you know, a lot of the clientele were in the sort of media sort of film world. You know, again, it was a lot of celebrities and famous people used to come and stay, and it was a great experience. I had a really happy time there.
And of course, Jenny was with you as well. Were you married at
Absolutely.
This stage? Had you got married at this stage? Yeah,
we had got married, and we'd had our first child, Toby. So he lived with us at Babington, and you know, he spent, you know, the first 2 years of his life there, and you know, we had a great time. And also what I loved at Babington was the whole interior design aspect of being a hotelier and creating sort of space for people to enjoy themselves. And we had the interior designer at the time was a lady called Ilse Crawford, who's very famous. And it was just a real pleasure walking around the hotel and all the bedrooms, and she sort of moved lights around and discussed paint colors and taught us how important ambience is to creating a setting for
absolutely, which is like
a restaurant or a hotel. It's absolutely key. It's not just about the food. You know, there's food is an important part of it, but it's also the people you're sitting at the table with, and you know, the lighting and the ambience all play into creating this incredible experience for people.
Of course it does, and it's evident that you got some of that knowledge, you know, in Ballyvillan. That's in Ballyvillan House. So I love the house. It's shabby chic. It's the beauty of the original architecture. And then, you know, some of the amazing antiques that go back years and years and generations with your family as well. But tell us about kind of your vision for that and the work you did. I suppose you came back in 2004. You had to obviously kind of put a bit of work into it in the early stages. But tell us about that. And, you know, what was your plan?
Yeah, well, we came back and, you know, we took a decision not really to do anything for a year or two, just to find our feet and see, you know, what we wanted to do. And, you know, my parents had, you know, had done an amazing job on, you know, refurbishing the house. It wasn't sort of done over 6 months. It was a 30-year process. So every year they did a little bit. And you know, when I was a boy, there's one bathroom in the whole building. And, you know, they put ensuite bathrooms in all the bedrooms. And, you know, so there was a lot that they did, and you know, they had a great natural sense of style, and so there wasn't that much to do. There were a few little tweaks here and there, like we sort of took the lino out of the bathrooms and took out the kind of 1980s baths and replaced them with antique roll top baths, you know, and placed them in the middle of the bathroom.
Gorgeous.
So added a bit, and we you know, took out the TVs, and we now put in Marshall speakers, Bluetooth speakers in the rooms, and espresso machines and things like that. So, you know, we kind of modernized it. And also, focused on the basics, like extremely comfortable mattresses and beds and pillows. And we knew where to get all that stuff, having been in the business and at Babington. So, you know, we just brought in all the basics and upgraded that side of things. So, you know, with the comfort and comfort levels are extremely high.
Yeah. So the house itself, it's got 6 bedrooms, and it's beautiful, absolutely beautifully laid out. But over the years, you have built on a fabulous addition, of course, more like you've got a barn conversion so that you could have events. And then you have the glamping area as well. And I actually stayed in the Earths when I was there, and tell me, it definitely didn't feel like camping. And just those little additions of, there was a Wellington boots and hot water bottles and all that, and we felt very loved while we were there, so enjoyed it.
It's all about the loving. And we converted some old farm buildings into a wedding venue after the last recession. Yeah. You know, because our business just fell off a cliff in 2008 to 2010. You know, went down 60%, and people stopped traveling, and even people with money weren't spending. And we were getting, at that time, we were getting an awful lot of wedding inquiries, and you know, we just didn't have the space, and it was very expensive hiring a marquee for the clients. So we decided to invest in creating this amazing wedding space, sort of shabby chic, kind of fun place to party. And it took off like a rocket. You know, it was very successful, and kept us here and kept the show on the road. And we were very pleased. And then we added the glamping a couple of years later. And as you say, you know, we do a turn down service and put hot water bottles in the beds at night. And you know, they had breakfast in the house. And it was fun. And then it had a kind of slight festival vibe and sort of boho, you know, vibe going on. We've got a lot of space here.
The whole area, I mean, you know, the ceremony we had was up in the woods, and then we had the champagne reception in the house, and then we were over for the dinner. And of course, yes, we danced all night, but even day two was a different feel. It was like more of a party element. You have the bands, you have the bars, like a Shebeen. It's so, I think I was one of the last to leave the bar there. That's in the barn. But just the whole vibe, I think, is that festival vibe as well. And then, of course, you have the beauty of the house as well, where mainly the family, I suppose, stay. So there's a nice mix to it, I have to say.
I always say, you know, what we offer is a real slice of authenticity. You know, the house is very traditional, but very comfortable at the same time, and, you know, has all the modern comforts and good Wi-Fi. And, we try, and everything we do, we try and maintain that kind of sense of mystery that people find so attractive about these old houses, because, you know, a lot of them, particularly after the last recession, you know, these country houses were bought by developers, and then there was too much concrete and tarmac, and they lost all that sense of magic, and they're just ruined, in my view. You know, and I think people want to go and feel they're connecting with where they are, with the history, with the place they're in. And I think that enriches the travel experience enormously, you know. And we work very hard to keep it authentic, and you know, the food, you know, we'll come on to that later as well, but you know, we have a big wall garden and grow all our food and keep pigs and hens and source food from local producers. You know, we're very lucky in County Cork. You know, there's an abundance of amazing artisan producers, and we tap into all of that.
We do
as well.
And that was, I suppose, the next thing I was going to get onto, because besides the accommodation and the events, you're a huge advocate of farm to plate. So, you know, I know you've your own wall garden, growing as much as possible there, and then everything you don't grow on the land you support local with. So talk us through, I suppose, the importance of that. Is that something that's been distilled in you from a childhood and throughout, and always was going to be something that you were going to bring to Ballyvillane House?
Yeah, it's something I've grown up with, you know, having grown up on a farm, you know, you always produce food, and the wall garden was always maintained, you know, from my grandparents' day. It's not something that we started because it was a trend to have a farm to fork philosophy. You know, we've always had that here. And, you know, I found some old photographs of the 1950s just after my grandparents moved in. And, you know, it was fascinating for me to see the wall garden. They had a lot of photographs of the wall garden, and it was going full bore, you know, like it is today. You know, it's not something that is new to us. And we've also been, you know, very inspired by, you know, Darina Ballymaloe and Myrtle Allen,
and of that family. And you know, I love their philosophy to food and life. And you know, they've been a huge inspiration, and we know them well, and we've grown up with them. And they're good friends of ours. But you know, and their generosity of spirit, I think, is very important as well. And you know, I've certainly learned that from them. So you know, it's very similar. You know, it's not complicated. You know, and it's you know, and sustainability is becoming more and more of an issue now. And you know, people are very curious where the food's from, and you know, it's important that we subscribe to those sort of philosophies.
And of course, let's not forget, Justin, about your amazing gin distillery. Now, this probably could have a podcast of its own, but tell us the amazing story behind it.
Yeah,
and where you are right now with it.
Exactly. I'll try and keep it short, because whenever I end up talking about gin, I said, do you really want to know about this? Because I'll go off on one. But it's, you know, we're very, very passionate about our gin. And, you know, I think Ballyvillane House, everything we do here is a story of diversity. You know, we're always trying new things, you know, to try and fend off starvation in the winter, because, you know, our tourism business and weddings business are very busy in the summer, but then winter in rural Ireland and tourism is always challenging. So we felt we can create something that we can export around the world, and it'll fit very well with what we're doing at the house, then that's the way to go. And I've been watching the rise of premium gin in the UK over the last sort of 15 years. And, and then in 2015, I rang a dear friend of mine who is a school friend of mine, Anthony Jackson, and he was a bit of a loose end at the time. And he's also had a lot of experience in the drinks industry. He has his own wine company. So I said to Anthony, do you want to explore doing gin? So he booked flights to London and set up a whole lot of meetings with some really interesting people in the industry. And we arrived in London and had an epiphany. I couldn't believe, you know, how big gin was. And it hadn't kicked off at all in Ireland at that time. So we left London very happy. And one of our conversations in London was with a chap called Charles Maxwell, who's the head distiller of the Thames Distillery in London. And he was the one who recommended to us, why didn't you use whey alcohol as your base spirit? Because nobody else is using it. And it's produced in Ireland, and it's synonymous with, you know, Ireland is the world's greenest dairy land. And to our surprise, actually, a lot of the grain spirit that's used by gin distillers in the UK and indeed in Ireland comes from France, because it's very hard to source, you know, grain neutral spirit that's produced in Ireland. So we left there going, this is amazing. I think we're gonna have a crack at this. So we got some samples and tried it and loved it. And then we are defined by the way, you know, we have a cow on the label, and the cow is, we've named our gin after Big Bertha, who's the world's oldest cow. And she lived in County Kerry near Sneem, and she died in 1994 at the remarkable age of 48. You know, she was just shy of her 49th birthday.
Amazing
and,
story.
And she's a Drimmon cow, which is a native species of Irish cow. And she also had an eye bulging 39 calves during her lifetime, which is another world record.
Yeah.
So, you know, we found that, you know, we decided to use the whey alcohol as our base. And then we were sniffing around and hunting around for a good name, and discovered Bertha actually through a friend of mine who, a chap called Turtle Bunbury, and he's a historian and writer, and just released a book called The Irish Diaspora, actually. And he went to Bertha's wake completely by accident back in the early 90s. And we lived together in Hong Kong, actually, Turtle and I. And I remember him telling us this story. He wrote about it for the Guardian newspaper 6 months after Bertha died. And so I've always been aware of Bertha's existence. And then through him, we met Bertha's owner and asked him permission to use the name.
Brilliant.
George Kelly, and he gave us his blessing very kindly. So we're bringing Bertha back in spirit, literally.
Big Bertha, she lives on, exactly. Yeah. And well, I just find it amazing about just, you know, you guys realizing that you could use whey. Because are you working with a local farmer for this? You are, aren't you, Justin?
Well, there's a local cheese company in Cork that produce a lot of cheese. And whey, as you know, is a byproduct of the cheese industry. And they ferment the whey and create a whey beer, and then it's distilled, and then we buy in the whey ethanol at 96%. It's a base spirit, whereas most other gin distillers would buy in grain, you know, a neutral grain spirit at 96%. And then we put that into our beautiful, shiny, proper still,
yeah. along with water, and then all our botanicals, you know, so we redistill it, and then and we produce Bertha's Revenge gin, and we do all the distilling and bottling and labeling on site. So we're very involved and have full ownership of the process, which is something we're very proud of. And you know, we started off with one still from Belgium. It was a Brulands, so 100 liter still, and then we got a second one shortly after it. And then at the end of 2018 we went off to Germany and still shopping for a few days, which is great crack. And we settled on a still by which was handmade for us by a company called Carl, C-A-R-L, amazing. In southern Germany. And it's one of the best stills you can get in the world, and it's producing wonderful spirit. But I mean, we have the equipment, we have the name, and Bertha is marketing gold dust. But the most important thing for us, that always has been, always will be, is flavor and taste. And we spent a lot of time developing our recipe,
yeah.
you know, back in 2015, 2016. And we ended up producing quite a spicy gin because, you know, the whey is quite rich in texture. It's quite luscious. Yeah. And it carries a lot of those spicy botanicals incredibly well. And then we add a lot of sweet citrus in there as well. And that comes through in the finish, and it really nicely balances with all the spice forward botanicals that we use. And then one of them we forage locally. It's called Alexander's. It's a peppery seed that ripens in July and August. And we head down to Ardmore and Kinsale and places like that, picking Alexander seeds in the summer evenings and listening to podcasts. And it's a real indulgence and something that we love doing. And so, you know, you know, we'd love to say all our ingredients are locally foraged, but, you know, there isn't much citrus growing around
yeah.
the hedgerows in County Cork, so you know yeah. you need that in gin. So we do have to import some, but it's also wonderful having the whey, you know, which is produced in Ireland, and
it's amazing.
You know, so we're very, very proud of that.
And, yeah,
you know, it's been exported all around the world now. You know, in 16 states in America, it's in Singapore, it's in Japan, and just got into Kenya. So you know, we're really, really pleased that it's you know going global.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And you've got three types of gin. Is that right? Am I right in saying that, Justin?
That's right. Yeah, we have our flagship Bertha's Revenge gin at 42% yeah. ABV. And then every autumn we release a slow gin because, you know, the slows ripen at the end of autumn. And that's 25% ABV. It's not as strong, and you can drink it neat or have it at Christmas time with a champagne, you know, like a Bellini, slow gin Bellini. And it's wonderful in our hedgerow martini cocktail. And then we've just released a couple of months ago our Navy Strength gin, which mm-hmm. is 57.1%. It's very strong, and the Navy Strength was traditionally, you know, purchased by the Royal Navy, and back in Napoleonic times, you know, they'd store all the rum and gin in casks along and on the deck with all the gunpowder, and if it spilled over during a storm or there was a raging battle against the French, you know, the rum or gin would come into contact with the gunpowder, and if it was over 57.15%, the gunpowder would still ignite and they could use it. If it was below that, then you couldn't light the gunpowder, and it put them in a very
amazing
dangerous position. So, you know, the purveyors of gin in the Royal Navy insisted on gin that was 57.1%, and it also meant that they weren't being sold watered down hooch either, you know. So they did yeah. a little test by mixing the gunpowder and the alcohol together, and if it lit up and they knew they were getting the good stuff.
Yes, and so I've tried it, and it's absolutely beautiful. I love it. But you're right.
No, like, you.
I mean, and you only need a very small amount of it because of, I suppose,
that's right.
High alcohol in it.
And also, the higher the ABV, the more flavor it carries. So it's whilst we yeah. have the same, you know, flavor profile as our regular gin, you know, we've dialed up some of the spices, so you really get those cumin and cardamom.
You do, and you don't need yeah. anything really. Like, I mean, just a bit of tonic, and I had a bit of orange with it, or a bit of lime with it.
That's
and
right.
That's all you need, and it's just beautiful, yeah. really nice. So well done on that. Yeah. So people,
and it's also yeah, the Navy Strengths. And sorry to interrupt, but yeah, the Navy Strengths are often preferred by mixologists because they carry so much flavor, you know. And if you want the gin to express themselves in
yeah.
cocktail, then a lot of mixologists would go for the Navy Strength as opposed to the, you know, regular strength gin, because, you know, you get all that flavor and you know, Bertha would be able
absolutely.
To express
it's,
well.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. I can understand why they do that as well. And where can people buy the gin through your website?
Yeah,
as well,
we have an online shop, absolutely, and it's ballyvillainspirits.ie, and you know, you can see the shop very, very easily. It's also on sale and retailers, you know, around country. You know, Bradley's off license in Cork. He's been a fantastic supporter of ours. He was the first stockist of Bertha's Navy Strength, so you know, he's always very knowledgeable and has an unbelievable knowledge and selection of not just gin and other spirits, but beer and cider as well. So he's great. And you know, it's in a lot of independent retailers around the country. O'Brien's, Celtic Whiskey Shop in Dublin, you know, Bertha's available in some of the multiples as well, like Dunn Stores and Marks and Spencer's. But you know, it's widely available around the country for sure.
Fantastic. I definitely recommend for any of our listeners anyway to go and try some. So going back, I suppose, to Ballyvillain House then, Justin, I mean, the last year, I mean, it's forced huge change with massive impact on your business and anyone in hospitality. How have you and Jenny managed through that?
Well, it's been very difficult, to be honest. You know, it's hard. You know, we're difficult on the staff. You know, we normally do a lot of weddings in the summer. We haven't done a wedding for, you know, over a year and a half now. And, you know, this year is going to be tricky as well, because, you know, we don't know how many people we're allowed to have at a wedding. Currently it's 6 people. And, you know, we're looking forward to welcoming, you know, some of our smaller weddings later on in the summer, and then hoping in the autumn, once the vaccine is rolled out, we will be allowed to host larger groups back on site. But it all depends on how the vaccine rollout goes and how, you know, and then the number of cases actually come down. So we just have, like everybody else, you have to, you know, adapt and play what's in front of you and keep in touch with our couples. You know, it's very, very difficult for all our, you know, wedding couples and their families as well. And everybody's been incredibly understanding, and, you know, we can't wait to you know, open the doors and welcome them all back in and host a wedding. And we just got to, you know, follow the public health advice and do best what we can.
Absolutely.
You know, we've had to avail of, you know, some of the government supports, otherwise we wouldn't be here. You know, we still have a lot of costs. You know, for example, insurance has hardly been reduced at all, even though the risk has gone down by, you know, 80%, you know, with the turnover going down. You know, the insurance have done very, very little to allow for that, which is extremely disappointing. And I know insurance is a big issue for many people. So, you know, that has to be paid. You know, if you don't have insurance, it's irresponsible. You know, you have to have buildings insurance and public liability and employers liability insurance. And we also, you know, have car loans and various other costs. You know, we have to, you know, electricity and, you know, they keep the lights on. You know, some of our key members of staff, we've been able to keep on through the wage subsidy scheme, which has been fantastic. And we're very appreciative of those. And I think the government have really been very good in that regard, you know, and helping businesses keep the lights on during this difficult time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you on that. And I think, you know, besides the fact that, you know, you do host a lot of events and all that, I think most people, if we think about it this year, are going to be doing staycations. Now, a lot of people, I mean, including myself, a lot of the time when I think about a staycation, I think of going west. So, you know, I suppose a lot of people don't realise that they can actually come and stay with you and just rent one of the rooms or glamping as a guest without attending an event. So tell us a little bit about that and how kind of people book and what are the offerings and so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, people can come and stay in the main house, and you know, we operate like a small hotel, so they, you know, they can book online or just phone us up and take a booking over the phone. And you know, and we do dinner every evening. We just do one sitting at 8 o'clock. There's no choice menu, but having said that, we're very happy to accommodate vegans and vegetarians, and we always hand the menu around before dinner just to make sure everybody's happy with it. And the reason we don't offer a choice is because, you know, we only have 6 rooms, and it just is not viable to offer a huge menu every evening. And it's incredibly wasteful as well. You know, we don't, you know, we have a real issue with food waste, and everything we serve up is whatever's in season in the garden and growing locally, you know, is
available. Which is fab,
ripe on the day, so it works very well. And then you know, pre-COVID, everyone used to sit on one big table, so it was more house party than hotel, and we'd introduce everybody before dinner. And actually, we'd have, you know, often Americans come up to me when they were checking out, going, "You know what? That was the best night I had in my whole holiday." Having dinner with their wives or partners, you know, every night for 2 weeks, and they just love a party. And then and we always sit the Irish in the middle because they're the best talkers, and they kind of bring everybody into the conversation. And it works really well. And of course, we appreciate some people, you know, would get completely freaked out about dining with a bunch of strangers. So we're very happy to accommodate them on their own table. But we find quite often they would end up drifting onto the main table.
Of course,
halfway through the main course anyway.
After a few of your gins, Justin, definitely.
Exactly. Well, I was gonna say, what we do often before dinner is mix everybody a cocktail. You know, we do rhubarb martini in the summer, and that just gets the conversation flowing and helps people relax a little bit. So, you know, it's guarantees spirited conversation during the evening. And then for breakfast, you know, we do a late breakfast till noon, which people really appreciate. And then we're always helping people plan day trips, and there's lots to do around here. You know, there's Blarney Castle, and people head off to Kinsale for the day. They do the Waterford Greenway in Dungarvan. It's not too far away, the beaches.
But,
just
even walking around the area, I mean, we went on about a 2.5 hour hike around. We left one gate and then arrived back in another way. And that was just beautiful. It's just such gorgeous scenery. You really are nestled in a gorgeous area there, because I know it's close to Fermoy, but it's not really Fermoy, you know. It's beautiful.
We have gorgeous walks, even on site, you know, through the lot of space and woods, and there's lovely trails all through our own woods. And you know, if you can do kind of half an hour, you know, 45-minute loop, or if you want to go on the small country roads, it's kind of two to three hour loop. And we have walking maps for everybody. You know, people go canoeing on the River Blackwater, and that is tremendous fun, and it suits all ages and level of fitness. We also send an awful lot of people to go salmon fishing with Glenda Powell on the River Blackwater. She's a world champion fly fisherwoman and one of the best fishing instructors in the country. And you know that she looks after everybody incredibly well, and that's a really fun activity to do as well.
Amazing. And when I was down there with you, when we were looking at the walled garden, and you were just showing me the area, because we talked about you looking at planning a literary culture festival on the grounds there. I love that idea. I think it's brilliant. Definitely something I'll be attending as well. So what's the plan for that, Justin?
Yeah, well, nothing's been confirmed yet. Yeah, we are exploring hosting a festival here in May 2022. And it's going to be all about, you know, food, drink, sustainability, rural issues, history, community, live music in the evenings. You know, we'll have live bands. And it's not going to be on a massive scale like the Electric Picnic. You know, it's going to be a couple of, you know, 1,000 people, 1,500 people. And we're going to have people, you know, coming in to give talks during the day. And
fantastic.
So that's something where we're working on at the moment, and we're very excited about that. And I just think it'll add a lot, to the whole well-being of community.
I think it would be amazing, and just such a gorgeous setting as well, and definitely something that I know a lot of people would be interested in attending. So keep us updated with that as well, Justin.
We hope to have things sort of finalized by October, and we'll make announcements by then, and we're just making lists of speakers, and if anyone wants to come and talk and get involved, you know, please get in touch. You know, we're very, very open to that.
And also Justin, so when you do open up and people are able to visit, is there day visitors allowed to just come and have a wander around the grounds? Or what's the plan for that?
In the past, it was yes. You know, the answer is yes. But when we were hosting weddings and occasionally we'd have a private rental in the house, the place wouldn't be open to anyone to drop in. But we are hoping to open a sort of cafe this summer. And I think, you know, people are dying to just get out and go for a walk around a nice garden and sit down and have a killer coffee and nice vegan plate of something. So we're you know, going to do sort of street food in concept and style, and people will come and, you know, get a good coffee, and there'll be tables and chairs outside. You can sit down and go for a walk, and you know, around the garden, and then head off again. So we're gonna try that this summer, and hopefully it'll be a success. And, you know, it's a stunning place, and lots of space, stunning. Lots of nice walks, and I think it's got real potential. And we're just planning all that at the moment. And you know, we still don't know when we're going to open, but we're hoping to, you know, June is what everyone thinks is the date.
Yeah,
we're hoping to be able to open, so we're going to have it all ready by then.
And, amazing. And I think the cafe will be fantastic, and just people to be able to like go down and have a walk around the grounds, because it's so beautiful. So yeah. People should definitely put that on one of their lists for a visit.
And also, we've got pigs and poultry here.
Exactly.
And, you know, whenever we have children staying, you know, there's always a procession every morning after breakfast to feed the piggies and collect the eggs, and they love all that. So that'll be, you know, when people are walking around, they won't just be walking through woods, to be able to interact with the animals, and, you know, as well. So there'll be lots of different things to do.
Brilliant. And so tell us, Justin, how can people find out more about you? And where can they inquire about staying? I know that right now it's unsure about when you can hold events and all that, but talk us through. So where can people actually get access to finding out more about Ballyvillan House, and of course about Bertha's Revenge Gin?
Yeah, well, the website is ballyvillanhouse.ie, and we put a lot of time and energy into our website. So it's got a lot of detail, and you'd be able to see our prices and book online, and give us a call anytime as well. On our telephone and contact details will be on the website. And then and Bertha's is located, you know, the distillery is located in an old cow shed, which is very fitting in the farmyard. So, you know, that's front and central to everything we do as well. And we'd love to see welcome people in this summer. And you know, we'll be making announcements about cafes and festivals.
Brilliant.
And various other things in due course. But, you know, we do hope to open in June, and we look forward to welcoming people back, you know, through the doors again.
Exactly. Well, Justin, thank you so much for joining us today. It was lovely to hear your story and for you to share it. I wish you and Jenny all the best for the future, and of course, Ballyvillan House and Bertha's Revenge Gin.
Thank you very much, Clara, and we really appreciate your support and giving us an opportunity to tell our little story. And you know, it's an authentic story, and I think it's one that people will enjoy, and we do look forward to sharing it with people.
Absolutely, Justin, you're so welcome. Thank you all for tuning in today. You can find Justin on Instagram and Facebook under Ballyvillan House, and also Big Bertha Gin. So give them a follow, and remember to like and share this podcast. You can also book or inquire about staying with Jenny and Justin at their beautiful house on www.ballyvillanhouse.ie. Thank you, as always, to Red FM for the production of this podcast. The final episode of this series will be in a few weeks with the amazing story of a local chef, Brian Murray, who owns the Glass Curtain in Cork.
You've been listening to a Red FM podcast. For more extra content, go to redextra.ie.